How's all your prayers this morning? Been thinking about last minute instructions. I used to get them at home when I lived at home as a child, and mom and dad would let us children know we're going to town, going to be gone for a few hours, and we expect you to behave. And we also have some chores that you need to get done before we come back. Y'all ever used to get some last minute instructions? And they would leave, and we feel like, you know, we got lots of time. We plan to do what they intended for us to, but we'll wait a little bit. And I can remember hearing the car come back up on the gravel in the driveway, and we wasn't finished. It wasn't because they gave us too much to do. We had had some other things we wanted to do first. And the rush that we put in those last couple minutes before they enter the house. Last minute instructions. They are different than the instructions that you would give just normally all the time. At work, when I'm working with the guys there, I work in an office building in Oklahoma City. And we have about 1,500 people that office in that building. And the owners expect us to try to maintain that building to keep everybody comfortable. Well, as I'm working with the guys and we're together all the time, instruction is a lot different than whenever I say, you know what, I'm fixing to take a week's vacation now. So everything will run smooth through this week. Got a different set of instructions. In fact, just in case they might forget it, a lot of times I'll write them down. You know, here's the things. If you could, take care of these things before I come back. It'll help the building to run smooth. This morning, I'm thinking about some last-minute instructions. I would like to start in Matthew 25 and 14. It says, "The kingdom of heaven is as a man traveling into a far country, who called his own servants and delivered them to them his goods." And then at the end of that 15th verse, it says, "Straightway he took his journey." This man wasn't selling out, retiring and moving off somewhere. He was just going to be gone for a while. So he's given some instructions. "I'm going to hand over to you some money, and I would like for you to turn a profit for me before I come back." And I wonder, what kind of instruction would you give servants? It'd be different instructions than just normal, everyday, you go do this, you go do this. Now, I wonder, did he sit down with them and tell them, I want to move you into another phase now, because if you just took a servant in from the field and said, I'm going to be gone for 6 months, and here's $100, see what you can do with it, most likely just as soon as you're gone, he's gone to the store and do something with it, and it's gone. But I wonder, did he spend some time with them and say, you know, here is how you can go about turning a profit for me before I come back? Well, this morning I'm not so much interested in the temporal, but I've been thinking about Jesus. Before he left, you remember the verse where it said, "Upon this rock, I'm going to build my church, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it." And then he set in motion the things that he felt were very important before I leave out of here. Now, would he talk to his disciples and say, it's going to be real important for us to build a mega church? You know, there are churches now that have 15,000 people in them. Was that what his main concern was? I want to give y'all some classes, 12 disciples. I'd like to give you some classes on how to make a 10,000 member church. He didn't do it. You remember when he had an opportunity, he could have done it, in the 6th chapter of John, when he fed the multitude, and they said he had to get away to keep them from making him a king. So his interest was not, I want to build something big. His interest was not, I want to show you how to raise money before I leave out of here, because the church is going to need money. He didn't do that. What did he do? What was very, very important to him as his hours ticked by? I'm just fixing to leave here, and I need to give final instructions. I would like for us to take a look at something that I've never really thought about it this way before. I'd like to look at John 13, because with all the instruction Jesus could have given his disciples, to carry on the church after he was gone, this is what he felt was very important to spend his time on. 13:1, it says, "Now before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour was come, that he should depart out of this world unto the Father, having loved his own which were in the world, he loved them unto the end." And he's down now to, he's got just a few hours before he's gone. And this is the final instruction that he felt like is the most important thing I can tell my disciples. It's not about how to build a big one. It's not about how to raise money. Here's what he did. It says he riseth from supper, laid aside his garments. The king of all kings. I've got a last minute instruction that I want to give. So what was his purpose? I need to wash 12 disciples' feet. And it's so important because always from here on, you disciples make sure that you keep each other's feet clean. It had nothing to do with it. He had a principle that he felt like, I have got to get over. Because, you know, if they don't get this one, there'll be no church anyhow. Washing the feet just represented something. Just like baptism represented something. You know, we have people that say baptism, you get somebody to go down and be dipped in the water and come out again, they go in a sinner and they come out a saint. The water doesn't do that. What it does is it represents. I think of the two words, this represents something. When we are baptized, what it does is it represents to those looking on and to the world, I'm a new creature. That old man is dead and you won't see him anymore. This is a new creature that has come up out of this water. When we do the Lord's Supper, there are some people that say, when you take that bread and that juice, it has been turned into the real blood and body of Christ. That's not so. It's just a representation. It's something to cause my mind to start thinking about what he really intended for us to get from it. And it's the same way with feet washing. It has nothing to do with the feet. It has everything to do with learning humility. And he realized, if I don't get this lesson across to him before I leave. And did he have any reason to feel like this was the most important? You know, Jesus said that he was able to perceive the hearts of men. Maybe they never even said a word and he could tell what was going on in their heart. But he didn't have to just do that with his disciples. They had a problem. And he knew, I'm going to have to do something quick because I'm fixing to leave here. Let's take a look at what the problem was. In Matthew 20:20, it says, "Then came to him the mother of Zebedee's children with her sons worshiping him and desiring a certain thing of him. And he said unto her, What wilt thou? She saith unto him, Grant that these my two sons may sit, the one on thy right hand and the other on the left, in thy kingdom." Do you think she came up with that by herself? Probably not. Probably there was a couple sons here that said, Mom, we're too embarrassed to ask him. Would you go and ask him for us? We would like to have a special place. Now, on down here just a little ways, it says that the other 10 heard it. And did they say down in the 24th verse, when the other 10 heard it, were they humble? Did they say, oh, that's fine. I'd be happy if they could have the left side and the right side. No, it says in the 24th verse, when the 10 heard it, they were moved with indignation against the two. Probably because they were wanting the left and the right. So this is what he's fixing to leave to take on the church. Mark 9:33, where he said, what was it that you were disputing along the way? You remember that passage? Heard y'all murmuring and talking about something as we were walking here. What was it? And they didn't want to tell him. Because it says what they were disputing about is, who's going to be the biggest in this kingdom that's coming up? And then I look at the one that to me shows that it was a serious problem. I'd like to take a look at it in Luke 22. 22 and in the 15th. When Jesus comes to them and he's going through these things of the Lord's Supper. 15th verse, he's saying, "With desire, I have desired to eat this Passover with you before I suffer." And you remember, he went on down and he told them, 21st verse, that one of you is going to betray me. Now that ought to bring some serious thoughts to your mind if you happen to be there. Who is it? Is it I? And it says in the 23rd verse, they began to inquire among themselves which of them it was that should do this thing. Now that's a good thing to do. That's a good thing when Jesus, he's just fixing to die and he's saying, one of you is going to betray me. And they're saying, is it I? That's good. But look at this next verse. And there was also a strife among them, which of them should be accounted the greatest. When they see that Christ, the end of Christ's life is almost here. And yes, they are concerned that one is going to betray him. But I'm also equally concerned who's going to be the greatest in the kingdom. And so, with Jesus looking at this and the seriousness out ahead, the instruction that he wants to give is, I got just a little bit of time. I need to give them an object lesson. Something that out in the future would cause them to say, I esteem the other greater than myself. And that's what feet washing really is all about. When we do it in an ordinance service, if we're not careful, we can just think about this one person. I want to be willing to serve this one person. What it needs to be is, this is a pattern that I want to have out in my life. Not just to the Christian, but to that person that comes up against me and does me wrong. I want to be able to serve him. And here Jesus is the one that girded himself with a towel. Now he could have told them, okay, I need to give you a lesson in humility. Now here, John, you get down and do Peter's and then I'll tell you who else to do. But instead, he took it on. There's a place that I'd like for us to look at in Philippians. In the second chapter. Because Jesus left us an example. Starting in the fifth verse, let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus, who being in the form of God thought it not robbery to be equal with God, but he made himself of no reputation, and he took upon him the form of a servant. The form of a servant is what I'd like for us to think about for a little bit. Because I believe Jesus realized, if they don't get a hold to this, it's going to self-destruct. How can we have anything that reaches out? Because if we're each one interested in making a name for ourselves, then we're going to reach out and should I get a convert, it's mine. There's not a common cause here. So he realized, you know what? This is the most important thing that I can leave to my disciples, is a lesson in humility. Taking on the form of a servant. And I'd like for us to think about something for a little bit. Before I am able to practice it at church, I've got to be able to master it at home. Because you know, we really come together just a few hours a week at service. But I live at home. The form of a servant. Taking on the form of a servant. And I tell you, as I thought about this, and thought about in my own life, you know, there's probably times when I need to have some feet washing services at my own home. And I'm not talking about the literal of it, but having learned to take the form of a servant for me. I'd like for us to go to Ephesians 5 and 25. Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ loved the church, and he gave himself for it. He took the form of a servant. I remember 34 years ago when we got married, I said this, and I wrote it down so I get it right. I, Dan, take you, Cheryl, to be my wife, to live together after God's ordinance in the holy bond of marriage, and I promise in the presence of God to love you, comfort you, honor and cherish you in sickness and in health, in prosperity, in adversity, forsaking all others, remain faithful as long as you both shall live. Remember that? Now, some people might would say, boy, you really went out on the limb when you said all that. But you know what? About everybody said about the same thing. And we all meant it when we said it. Do you remember the going together days when her wish is my command? You just say you would just, kind of like David back there with his mighty men when he said, I just wish I had a drink of water from Bethlehem. And he didn't have to tell them, now you go get it. It was, I know that would make them happy, and I'll do it. Remember those days? But you know what? Time can pass. And wedding days are over. And we said that they would be number one in our life. I've got an incident that I always hold in front of me to remember who I can be if I don't hold that form of a servant in my home. About 5 years after we were married, money's tight, and I'm the budget and review board. You know, you got to bring it before me to make sure we got the money for it. And you know how it is, sometimes you will, guys, maybe I'm the only one, but when money's a little tight, the place that we look like it needs to be tightened up on is the food budget. That's what's getting it. Cut the food budget. Now, you know, really, that's kind of like cutting my throat, because that I ate it. Everything, we didn't throw anything away. What she bought, I consumed it. But it's something that she's buying, so it needs to be tightened up. But I remember one day when I'm telling her how she needs to cut the food budget because things are a little tight. And one day I saw a motorcycle that I had to have. Remember Jesus saying, let this mind be in you. We're told here, let this mind be in you, just like the one that Christ had. He took the form of a servant, willing to serve. Well, I saw that motorcycle, and I should have said, but you know what, that wouldn't be a servant. If I have that much money, let me give her a little more on the food budget then. But no, at that instant, it fit. You know, gas probably back then might have been $1 a gallon. It's way up there real high, and I need a motorcycle. Really what I need is an excuse to be able to go do what I wanted to do. So I got that motorcycle and bring it home, and now since I've got what I want now, she's back to number one in my life. Now is that the recipe for a happy marriage? You know what it says at the end of that feet washing service? If you know these things, happy are you if you do them. And it would be good for us to just kind of move the feet part of it out of the way. And it's in my everyday living that I become a servant, that I take on the form of a servant. Because it goes into areas, if you know these things, happy are you if you do them. If I want a happy home, then I need to do those things that brings happiness. And the form of a servant will do it. There's a verse that I'd like for us to think about because to me it's a guarantee. It's back there in Philippians again. It's a guarantee to us. It'll work in a home. It'll work in the church. And it's in the fourth verse of the second chapter. It says, look not every man on his own things, but every man also on the things of others. Now when you look at that one, sometimes we'll say, yeah, I have a tendency to do that. He got a new car and I'd like to get a new car. That's not what he's talking about. It is having a care and concern for others. But look back in that third verse. Let nothing be done through strife or vainglory, but in a lowliness of mind, let each esteem other greater than themselves, preferring one another. And I'd like to mention something here. I have seen this in a different light than I do now. Have you ever been in a church service and you see two ministers get up at the same time to go to the pulpit? I'd always hoped that would never happen to me, but it has happened. And I used to would think, when I wasn't the one doing it, I would think somebody missed it. Now what I think is, I'm human. But there's something I'd like for you to think about out in the future. When you see that happen, I'm fixing to get an opportunity to watch a feet washing service. I'm fixing to get an opportunity to see humility in action. I've seen it. Last year at Monarch, you know, Brother Leslie is one of those preachers where he's ready. Brother Leslie Busby, he's got a message ready. And one night at service, he was sitting there in the congregation, and they called time for the message, and there was a pretty good wait there. And then I heard him. He kind of raises down, goes down, and gets his Bible, and he's starting to raise up, and he said, "I've got a message." And about that time, he looked up and saw Brother Danny Adams up at the pulpit, up at the rostrum there, starting to get up. And I mean, it was just a continual flow. He said, "I've got a message, but brother, you go right ahead." And I mean, he sat right back down. And you know, I don't know what Brother Leslie's message was, but he preached a message to me just in that one action. You know what? He could have said, "Now, brother, you're the young brother. Sit down there." But instead, in lowliness of mind, let each esteem other greater than themselves. And I had one more example that has helped me, and I hope Brother Marty won't mind here. But we were at Monarch, and you know, it's a long ways from the congregation up to the pulpit. And we're in another service, and Brother Marty gets up, and he's headed for the pulpit. And he's, as a man on a mission, he's got his head down, and he's heading to take care of the job that he's got to do. Well, the congregation can see at the same time that on the other side of the pulpit, Brother Veda McMillan has gotten up, and he's headed up the other side. And back in Oklahoma, we'll call that a train wreck fitting to happen. They're fitting to meet, and something's got to happen here. And I love the example that I saw. Brother Marty reached the pulpit, raised his head, saw what was happening, spun around, headed right on back to his seat. Let each esteem other greater than themselves. Brother, I prefer you. You move right on ahead. You know, in a game of basketball, they will sometimes at the end of that, they will say, "This person right here was the leading scorer. He got 29 points. You know, the next one, he got so many." What if one of those players said, "You know what? The next game we play, I'm going to get that title of the leading scorer." So the next game comes along, and it doesn't matter where he is on the court. When he gets the ball, he throws it, see if he can get it. There's a very good chance that they'll lose because he may not be in the spot to be able to make the point the easiest. This verse that says, "Let each esteem other greater than themselves," tells me something, because the team that really wants to win, it's not about who makes the most points, but that we together win. And that's what's important. Remember, David thought he was only going down to take some cheese and bread to his brothers. And when he looked on that scene and he saw what was happening, and it really wasn't anything about himself, what got him stirred up was when he heard Goliath defy the army of the living God. It wasn't about that he said, "I've got an ability." He just believed in his heart, "I'm willing to die rather than let God's name be defiled." Well, you remember what his brother had to say to him? Here, his brother was much older. I believe David would have been some kind of proud if his brother had a said, when he brought the cheese and the bread, "David, be praying for me, because I can't take this anymore. I'm going over here to take care of him." Well, when that didn't happen, and David decided he was going to do it, "I'll go. God can help me." What did his brother say? "I know thy pride and the naughtiness of thine heart. You just came to see the battle." And you remember what David said back? "What have I done? Is there not a cause?" I believe what we all need to see out ahead of us is there's a cause. It's something greater than just me. At the times that I should happen to get up along with somebody else and I feel like crawling under the bench, I'll say, "You know what? I'm human and I make mistakes. I'll be available, Lord, anytime you want it." Because a lot of times the hardest ones are for those with just the one talent that would just as soon bury it as to use it. And the devil all the time is trying to give an opportunity. Boy, if you'd have buried it, you wouldn't have been in this embarrassing situation. But for us to realize, you know what? The Lord has need of each one of us. But something that He realizes is vital. So vital that He used the last few minutes of His life here on earth to say it's going to be real important for you to wash one another's feet. And not to spend our time thinking about the literal part of it, but what it means when I get up from there and I go out in the world. Let us do good to all men, but especially to those of the household of faith. That I would spend my time, can I help you? Can I serve you? I want to be able to have, as Jesus did, the form of a servant. I'd like to read this one more time in the fifth verse, Philippians. Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus. We're not going to pick it up from the world around us, because the world around you will tell you have your rights. Stand up for your rights. If you don't do it, who will? And all the time, Jesus is saying, I took on the form of a servant. It says He made Himself, seventh verse, He made Himself of no reputation. He took upon Him the form of a servant and was made in the likeness of man. And being found in fashion as a man, He humbled Himself to the point that He was even willing to become obedient to the cross. He left us an example. And I believe what He's doing to us today in 2011 is begging us, don't forget the example that I left you. The feet washing service that we go to, you know, maybe once a year, let it not be, okay, we're finished with that and I go back to my regular activities. But my life would be following that kind of a pattern, that I would desire to serve others. There's a song, number 201, because sometimes we think, okay, humble myself and that's a low position. But this one puts a different picture on it. Song number 201, that first verse, humility, thou secret veil, unknown to proud in heart, where showers of blessing never fail. You mean there can be showers of blessings when you have humbled yourself? And not just, I've had times where I humbled myself. There's a place where it talks about that person that he did wrong and humbled himself. That has a different look to it than the one that he was doing right and was wrongfully treated, and yet he humbled himself. This one says, there's a special place where showers of blessings never fail and glories ne'er depart. It says, oh, make thy blessed abode with me. Not just come every once in a while, but stay with me. Oh, make thy blessed abode with me, thou angel of the sky. If I may ever dwell with thee, my soul shall never die. Humility. There's another verse of a song, number 298. It says, if thou wouldst have the dear Savior from heaven walk by thy side from the morn to the even, there is a rule that each day you must follow. Humble yourself to walk with God. And when I'm humbling myself to walk with God, usually it's going to involve the people around me, that I humble myself. And there is one more that I'd like to close with, because I'd like for us to remember, if you know these things, just the knowledge of them isn't enough. Happiness in my home and happiness in the congregation comes when I do them. There's another one, number 509. In a world filled with violence and hatred, everywhere wars and turmoil we see, God's people face daily this struggle. Only love will keep us free. And that third verse says, Lord, give us true warmth and affection. When one fails, help us rescue his soul. How do I see it? Do I have the love that Christ had? When one fails, you know, if we're not careful, we could say, yeah, I've been seeing it come for a long time. It says here, help us rescue his soul. He's not heavy, because he's my brother. Let us cry as we carry his load. It says, dear saints, let us vow to each other. I will help, I will comfort and pray. I will stand by your side and defend you in this battle we're facing today. It says, we need each other, brethren. for only love will carry us through. Let us stand by each other, brethren. Take courage, be faithful, and true. And that's going to come from me taking on the form of a servant. And you being able to see by my life every day, not just at meeting, but at home, that I desire to serve.